Has anyone here ever driven in thick fog? You have to slow down, right? Become laser focused on what's right in front of you. You don't have the distance vision with which you normally drive, so you have to move slowly, cautiously forward and make sure that the next few feet are clear. And then when you reach that point, you look for the next bend in the road. Because if you don't, what happens? That fog, that lack of clarity is what our society is moving through right now. This pandemic is the thick fog. We called it a pea super in England, that we can't see through clearly yet. We're not sure what tomorrow or next week, or let alone next month or year, is going to hold. So we have to move cautiously with next steps, and we have to wait until the mist parts and the way becomes clearer. Because, my friends, when you drive too fast in fog, you risk endangering yours and others' lives. And I don't think that's what we want to do as a fellowship in the midst of the rush to open churches at this time, is it? COVID-19 is still spreading, even in our community, as we just heard from Jason. We've crossed the threshold of 100,000 deaths already, and there's no cure, vaccine, or treatment identified yet. My friends, we're at the end of the beginning of the pandemic, I'm sorry to say, not at the end of the pandemic, even though we wish we were. It may be with us for a while longer yet. So, how do we choose our path forward and discern what's next, both individually and for Chalice, in the midst of this potentially deadly fog? As society slowly emerges from the lockdown and some people venture gingerly or recklessly back out, you may wonder whether anything's really changed from when we went into lockdown. Now, if anything, COVID is more widespread now than it was before, but our medical system perhaps feels a little bit more confident in addressing larger numbers of cases. Through flattening the curve, we've had time to learn more about the virus, but we haven't yet figured out how to mitigate it, or how to treat those who have it, or how to protect the vulnerable from it. And although our neighboring county of Los Angeles has been significantly impacted, we in the Conejo Valley have been relatively fortunate so far in not having huge numbers of cases and deaths. Sadly, once again, this pandemic seems to disproportionately affect poorer communities and communities of color, where people often live in closer proximity to one another. So, really, we can't pretend that this isn't still a threat to many. As you know, President Trump issued his order last week that all churches could reopen immediately. And our governor, Newsom, succumbed to pressure to allow churches in California to reopen, even though they were originally in phase three of his plans. But the evidence we see is that churches that opened recently became vectors for the spread of COVID-19. So we're left confused with the fog as thick and opaque around us as ever, yet being told it's safe to move speedily ahead while the evidence proves something different. Of course, our longing is to get back to fellowship life as we knew it, gathering in person, being able to hug one another, to mingle, sing, and worship together, and share food and coffee hour. But that's not what reopening actually looks like during these times. Reopening our buildings is much more complicated than closing them. In fact, to house the around 150 to 160 people who've been joining our virtual worship service regularly, we would need six services because we can only get about 25 people safely into our sanctuary with social distancing. So we'd have to take everybody's temperature upon arrival. People would need to wear masks and gloves, and we'd have to sanitize and disinfect everything everywhere constantly. And then we couldn't sing or hug or get close to one another. So it would be a much less nourishing and connected time than our current online worship services, I think. So when our bored and isolated question of what is right to do next, we look to our mission and our UU principles for guidance. You heard in our beautiful story earlier, which Sam wrote specially for this service, how Nana designed her life guided by our seven UU principles. And they helped her discern what to do and how to model life for her granddaughter. And likewise, the Unitarian Universalist Association made its recommendations based on scientific evidence and our principles, highlighting equity, safety, and inclusion for all. They recommend not opening physical buildings until May 2021, when scientific advances have made it safe. Because we care about inclusion as a faith. We care about science as well as the health and safety of all our people. It's not church for some. It's church for all. As one of my colleagues, Reverend Dr. Cynthia Landrum, shared, and I agree with, we have the good fortune to not be in the category of needing to open our doors in order to continue with our core operations. We've been successfully holding worship, religious education, committee meetings, small groups, and entertainment online. And before long, we'll have also had our first annual meeting and a major fundraiser online. And local UUA staff shared with us what Reverend Dr. William Barber, the founder of the Poor People's Campaign, said regarding our obligations to one another in this crisis. He pointed out that our first duty is the care of those around us. We need to put our longing for church community in the context of what harm it could cause to those whom we love, and then to the broader communities around us. We've heard one story after the next of churches reopening, following all the safety protocols, and yet people still getting infected and dying as a result of gathering. Jennifer Butler from the group Faith in Public Life writes, "Social distancing is a moral responsibility, an act of love, and expression of our care for one another. That means churches must remain closed until they can open safely. People of faith bear a special duty, whether at a mosque for Friday prayers, a synagogue for Shabbat, or services in churches or temples. Coaxing believers into crowded worship spaces in a time of pandemic is not an act of faith or love. It is a reckless act with deadly consequences." So I believe we need to focus on what we can do at this time, not on what we can't. The theology of pan-experientialism tells us that there are myriad ways to experience life. Now, many of us are mourning the current loss of in-person gathering and physical contact, of course. But pan-experientialism invites us to broaden our experience of life by celebrating, exploring, and developing our many other senses. It's an opportunity to become aware of and deepen additional aspects of our experience, be it visual, oral, intellectual, energetic, emotional, or spiritual. The physical has its place, but at this time, we can explore and strengthen those other facets of life's experience. Now, some churches, mosques, or synagogues perhaps have a greater need to be around their physical structures, their icons or relics or sacred ritual objects. But we don't have that need. Our buildings are beautiful and provide a lovely space to gather, a lovely home for our community, but we don't need to be in them to practice Unitarian Universalism. And though our longing is to be together physically, to hug one another and feel each other's energy close, it's not worth endangering each other's health and lives. And thanks to modern technology, we can continue to be connected virtually, to grow spiritually, live full, rewarding lives, and further our justice work and spread compassion, even at a social distance. So as your minister and board, we're looking at what's next through the lens of how we're living into Chalice's mission during these times. So what does it mean to nurture spiritually courageous people who transform the world through justice and compassion at this time. That slide was from my installation a few years ago, seeing us crowded there together with our mission statement above. Well, first of all, I ask you, how are you nurturing and practicing spiritual courage? Now, some of you may be thinking deeply about the purpose and meaning of your life. Others of you may be evolving your spiritual practices to find ways to have more equanimity and courage during these uncertain times. Or perhaps you're journaling, or you're meditating, or reading, or praying, or you're making art or music, or walking in nature. Or you're attending our weekly meditation and check-in, or our sing-alongs, or our family chapel. Maybe you're taking classes that are expanding your mind or heart. If you're doing any of these things, then you're living our mission. How are you helping transform the world through justice these days? You might be working on making elections fair and available to all. Or perhaps you're making masks for farm workers and foster children. Or you're advocating for racial justice through work with Surge or other organizations that help to create a fairer world for all people, especially in light of the horrific recent killings of unarmed people of color. Or you may be involved with ongoing climate justice work and participated in our community forum on the story of plastics on Friday. Or you're shopping for immune-compromised folks, or you're bringing food to those in need. I invite you to find your niche, what calls to you to better care for our local and wider world. If you are contributing your time, your ideas, or your treasure to causes that make the world more equitable for all, then you are living our mission. And how are you growing your compassion and capacity for love during these times? These painful times when hate and division is spreading like wildfire, and we're being asked to answer the call of love, my friends. What does that look like during this pandemic? It might mean you're growing closer to your loved ones and are learning to have greater compassion for your children or your partner. Or you're rekindling connections with family members and friends who are further away. Or it might mean you're reaching out with your loving, caring heart to others who need a listening or encouraging word, a listening ear or encouraging word. Or perhaps you're calling people to check in and provide comfort. Or you're reading stories to children whose parents are out working in the fields. My friends, if you're doing any of these, you are living our mission. It has very little to do with whether we're gathering in person or not, does it? Our fellowship is not closed, my friends. Our buildings are closed so our community can be safe. And so we don't become a vector for the spread of COVID-19, but Chalice is very much open and vital. In fact, in some ways, we're more open than we've ever been before because we can include people who want to join us from anywhere in the world. We can include people who are sick at home. We can include people who haven't been able to get to Chalice or didn't know about us. We are open. We are open for spiritual growth. We are open for justice. We are open for compassion and love. My friends, we are open for living our mission and principles. So that's what's next for our community. For now, the fog only allows us to see and plan for the next few months. So we'll continue living into our mission virtually through Labor Day. Our board and I will reassess our situation quarterly as the fog lifts and we're able to see the sun peeking through. And throughout, we'll continue being guided by our mission and principles, doing our important work in the world while acknowledging our interdependent web and keeping one another safe. So I invite you to write out our Chalice mission. Actually, I'll share that slide of our mission with you to put up by your computer or on your fridge. I'll send it out in an email later so that you can see it every day and be inspired by it. And I invite you to play a little game with yourself if you're willing. Look at our mission each morning and ask yourself how you want to live into it today. Now, you don't have to do it all. It's aspirational. But just choose one aspect each day and focus on that. How do you want to be more spiritually courageous? How do you want to transform the world through justice? How do you want to spread compassion and love? Because what you do, my friends, matters. The choices you make and the intentions you set matter. And who we are as a community matters. That's what we're working for in this world. That's why we're gathering. And if you're joining us for the first time or are new to Chalice, I invite you to reflect on what mission is guiding your life. For all of us, it's really powerful to get clearer on our individual intentions and commitments in life, as well as be part of our collective mission. Ultimately, I don't think any of us can go wrong by working to bring more love into this world. So as we transition to our closing hymn about answering the call of love, my question to you then, as a member or friend of Chalice, is how are you living your personal and our collective mission during these times? What are you committed to? So we're going to reopen our chat in a moment, and feel free to type into the chat some of how you are living Chalice's or your own mission at this time, and then talk about it in our virtual coffee hour afterwards. The 19th century liberal minister, Henry Emerson Fosdick, said, "No life ever grows great until it is focused, dedicated, and disciplined." My friends, may we focus on what we can do at this time. May we be inspired by our mission and answer the call of love, the call of justice, and the call of compassion as we continue to discern our way safely through the fog. May it be so. Blessed be.